conspiracies, endless wars, hidden forbidden history, the depopulation agenda, cryptozoology, mystical visions, hidden mysteries, advanced subterranean civilizations, flying saucers, alien abductions, and secret space programs, time travel, wellness, and healthy living. Where do you go to find out about these subjects and more? To James Bartley's Cosmic Switchboard Show. That's where. James Bartley will provide cutting-edge information and will interview the top investigators and researchers in a variety of fields. Listen in every week to the Cosmic Switchboard Show, hosted by James Bartley.
Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you are listening to the Cosmic Switchboard Show. Today, my very special guest is Derek Tyler. Derek Tyler began studying the topics of UFOs and alien contact in 1967 at the age of six when he had his first UFO sighting. It was not to be his last. He has had at least five more sightings, two of which involved military aircraft. One of these sightings lasted for over 40 minutes, and in the other, the craft approached within about 40 feet of him. In addition, he is both an alien and military abductee who was able to retain a number of very specific and highly detailed memories of events which took place during several of his abductions. He has also interviewed well over 3,000 abductees and was an acquaintance of the late Bud Hopkins, who was at the time considered to be the world's top civilian authority on the subject of alien abductions. In the mid-1990s, Mr. Tyler decided to open a discussion group on Internet Relay Chat Network. The group quickly drew in many interested people, and within just a couple of months was the largest and most popular channel of its type in the world. It was through this discussion group that he was eventually noticed and contacted by a number of individuals from deep within the covert world of Black Ops who had worked with aliens or their technology during the course of their regular duties. They were kind and generous enough to eventually meet with him privately, at which time they delivered a number of military-style briefings to him and educated him about many things he would otherwise never have had a way to learn. Derek is currently the administrator of a discussion group on Facebook called UFOs and Alien Contact and has been studying all things alien-related for about a half century. Far from having all the answers, he is acutely aware of the limitations of his knowledge and understands clearly just how many things about aliens remain unknown to us at the present time. He is preparing to release his first book on the subject, one that seems destined to break new ground and garner a lot of public attention. It is entitled Alien Contact, The Difficult Truth, and it is unlike anything you have ever seen before in terms of manuscripts within the UFO genre. So without any further ado, Derek Tyler, how are you?
I'm good, James. Thank you for having me on your show, and congratulations. I hear you've got a gangbuster of a show going on.
The pleasure and the honor is all mine. We wouldn't have the show were it not for the help given by Deborah Jane East, of course, the gal who runs Notes from the Underground, another outstanding show. Mm-hmm. Deborah has mentored and tutored me in the art of creating a podcast, so I am forever in her debt. Now, we've got so much information to cover, so much ground to go over. Right off the bat, could you tell me, what was the purpose you had in mind when you set out to write this book? Well, what did you want to convey to the readers?
Well, I felt for many years that the subject of alien contact should be covered in colleges and universities. I mean, I think it's just common sense that it's the most important and profound topic that the human race has ever come across. And it only makes sense that, to me anyway, that universities should be covering this, but they don't. And I guess I've seen a lot of books out there that basically just kind of repeat the same information. And I thought people kind of deserve to be able to have a high-level, university-level discussion on alien contact. And I feel I'm qualified to give something like that. And so I wanted to make it available to people. So I wrote this book. I waited until now to do it so that I could be sure that I got things right and I didn't mess it up when I wrote the book.
Thank you for doing so. You're right. So many books out there really just recycle and regurgitate the same information over and over again, the clinical abductions, the clinical medical exams, the the hybrid baby presentations. We really need to progress and move beyond that. Although those are key elements of what's going on, it's just really the outward facade of what is going on underneath. In your opinion, are hostile alien powers manipulating, interfering with, or controlling our government and military and that of other nations?
I think there's very little question that they are. I think that it's pretty clear to me that they've done so throughout our history. I don't think we've ever been alone on this world. The question is not, are we alone? It's, have we ever been alone? And I'm sure the answer to that is no. It seems pretty obvious to me that such things as chemtrails would not be ordered or approved of by any human-controlled government or military leader. But there they are in the sky every day. I've seen them dozens of times over the town where I grew up, and there's no question that they've got several purposes, and none of them are for our benefit. And that's just it's just one example of the many things that I don't think would be going on if we ran our own show here.
I agree. There's this limitation that many so-called truthers run into. They butt their head against the ceiling of the 5 cents conspiracy, where they think we're just up against power-mad bankers. But would power-mad bankers irradiate the planet with Fukushima and all these leaky nuclear power plants and all this incessant nuclear bomb testing? Would power-mad bankers, if they were exactly like us, chemtrail the skies and frack the earth and pollute the world with GMOs? They seem to see themselves as a breed apart from us, whoever seems to be running the show. So why should they want to create a perfect environment for us?
Yeah, it seems to me that those people are psychopaths. It seems to me that in order to rise to the top levels of power, you have to have almost a psychopathic personality. You have to be willing to tell any lie to any person purely for your own benefit. But at the same time, as you said, the people that are truly giving the orders are not the people that we think are running the show. Our elected leaders aren't in charge. They're taking orders from people that are in the shadows, that know that the military will remain, the aliens will remain, and these giant financial fortunes will still remain. And that's who really calls the shot. And those people are not, they don't have any interests in common with us. But at the same time, they're poisoning this world to the point where it's, if they keep doing this, it's going to be uninhabitable before long.
That's right. Uninhabitable for, well, Homo sapiens sapiens, let's say. Maybe for a hybridized version between this ruling alien faction or factions and us. Because it seems to me, Derek, and I'd like your thoughts on this, that there seems to be this effort at terraforming. And I'm reminded of that movie, The Arrival, with Charlie Sheen, where these aliens come along and they start altering the climate and the environment of the Earth to make it suitable for them. And that's what I see. I mean, the pollution with radiation just from Fukushima alone, the mass death of marine life, the chem spraying, the incessant, it's to the point now, Derek, where in some places I've been to, you don't even see distinct chemtrails anymore. It's just a permanent chemtrail haze, misty clouds, fake clouds. And also the fracking and also the nuclear radiation that's leaking all over the place. Does it seem to you that there is a terraforming effort underway?
Yeah, I think there certainly is. When I used to live in Los Angeles, I used to have a little game I played with myself where I would count the number of contrails I could see over LAX, which was the biggest airport in the world at the time. And the most I ever counted was 14. Usually there was 8 or 9. But with chemtrails, you get 30 or 40 of them in the sky at once. And they linger there all day, and they, as you say, they form eventually a completely clear blue sky in the morning will turn into an overcast chemical haze in the afternoon. Some of the things that they put in those chemtrails are terrifying. It's nanotechnology, it's genetic modifiers, it's insect DNA that's been modified so that it can combine with our DNA. And the terraforming is going on right under our noses. Fukushima has already killed the Pacific Ocean, and right now it's probably frying people like me that are living on the West Coast. And it's, you know, there's no end in sight for that. It's drilling its way towards the center of the Earth right now, and they can't stop it. It seems to me that this planet is being intentionally geoengineered and terraformed to suit the purposes and the comfort needs of the race that's going to be the new masters here. if they're not already the masters, which I think they might already be.
That's a very good point, because one of the things that have been pointed out about the incessant chemtrailing is it's resulted in something known as, quote, global dimming, where we are fully 25% less photonic energy, i.e. sunlight, is getting to the surface of the planet because of this perma-chemtrail haze above us. So it seems that not only is there a global dimming aspect, but as you pointed out, there's nanobots in the chemtrails, there's all kinds of heavy metals, there's all kinds of DNA-altering substances, not just an effort to sicken people and reduce the population, although that is a key facet. It's like they're changing our DNA from inside out.
Yeah, and the reptiles enjoy a planet which is darker and has more methane and more radiation. They can handle the radiation. They can handle the methane. We've got thousands upon thousands of methane leaks just in the United States alone, which are not being tended to at all. They're just letting it leak out.
That's a very good point, Derek. Like in Southern California, the news broke for a short while last year. In fact, correct me if I'm wrong, entire communities were relocated because of this mega methane leak that was coming up from beneath the surface.
Yes, and if you look up, pull up a map on the internet and just type in methane leaks on Yahoo or one of the search engines, you can find literally hundreds of separate methane leaks just in single states alone, and it's that way over the whole country. So I can't think that it's an accident.
No, it does seem to be an effort at terraforming because, as you pointed out, because we're adults here and we have a very good idea of who or what this controlling factor is. I'm satisfied that it's one or more reptilian factions that are behind a lot of this, using a number of, let's say, ET vassal races to do a lot of the heavy lifting for them. What they've done, as you know, is they've created this hybridized reptilian bloodline to be their kind of plantation managers, the middle managers here on the surface. So, never mind all the grassroots hybridization going on, where people at all walks of life, all strata, the atrocious bullying coworker, the atrocious bullying boss at work, odds are, 5 will get you 10, those are reptilian hybrids. All these terraform changes, the heightened background radiation, the methane, would benefit them, and not just the pure-blooded reptilians who come up from the surface or come down here from other worlds through spacecraft or stargates. Those that are hybridized, reptilian-human hybrids, these changes will benefit them, but they will not benefit us.
Well, they're certainly not going to benefit us. Many of the things that they're doing are designed to short-circuit our immune systems and to make us more susceptible to diseases, to shorten our lifespans, in other words, artificially. And others are just flat-out designed to... They appear to be changing the genetic character of the human race on a global basis. And the way that they're doing that is they're creating hybrids. And they are, I mean, a lot of people have heard about hybrids, but they don't ask what's being done with these hybrids, because they've been doing this for a long time. They've got a lot of hybrids by now. What's happening to those hybrids? They're being released into the population to live and work among us and to breed with us. Probably most of them don't even realize that they are hybrids. But all you need is sufficient number of hybrids and time, and you will change the genetic footprint of the human race to something which is partly alien. And the human race, as we know it, will not even exist anymore if you let enough time expire.
That's a very good point, because I believe at this time, more than any, we are seeing, Derek, the empty vessel syndrome, where you look at some of these people, and increasingly troubling to me, kids at a younger and younger age are manifesting this empty vessel, glassy-eyed stare. These are people, and increasingly children, that are genetically predisposed to being taken up as a host by one or more non-human entities. Eventually, these empty vessels will be taken up, and people will become hosts, and they will begin to act in hive consciousness, Borg collective fashion, each affecting change in micro and macrocosmic ways in their sphere of influence.
I think the biggest enemy that we have, in a way, is television itself. Television is guaranteed to hypnotize anyone who watches it within a matter of seconds. The flicker rate on a television screen, as you probably know, is exactly matched to the alpha rhythm of the brainwave. The alpha state is the state that's used for hypnosis and high suggestibility, and a television will hypnotize you, and you won't realize it's happening, and most people think they're a little too clever for that to happen to them. They're not. After they're hypnotized, it will begin giving you its commands. in the form of commercials, news, suggestions. All they are really doing is brainwashing hundreds of millions of people at a time. And it's pretty obvious that people are obeying those commands because basically here in America, our country is being stolen right out from under us, right in front of our eyes. And we're doing absolutely nothing to stop it. We're sitting here in a daze as our last chances disappear rapidly.
It's right out of that movie, They Live, that yes. John Carpenter flick, where you've seen it and a lot of the listeners have seen it, where a covert signal is being broadcast through television and through radio and whatnot, and it keeps people in this dumbed-down, docile state. And meanwhile, they're surrounded by all these subliminals. But it's not even subliminals, a lot of cases, in the lamestream media, because they're being hammered, the viewers are hammered constantly with war, ISIS, terrorism, threats, vaccinations are good for you, shaming of people who don't go along with the rest of the herd, nonconformity is being drummed out of people, beginning at the schools. Elementary schools are really just prisons. So what we're seeing is this Orwellian state, this 1984 Orwellian state on steroids, and the people, unfortunately, just continue to chew their cud. But thankfully, Derek, there are people like you that are standing in the gap. One thing I'd like to ask you, based on what we've been talking about thus far, because it kind of segues into this next question, is, in your opinion, are we currently at war with one or more alien races or groups? Is our world being invaded and colonized as we speak?
I don't think there's any way to avoid the conclusion that we certainly are at war. Just the fact that our genetics are being tampered with is by definition an act of war in itself. Do you remember a couple or 3 years ago when there was a story about the U.S. and the Chinese navies combining off the west coast of the United States to fight against an alien attacker?
Yes, I remember that.
Well, I believe that story is accurate. And, you know, they made an excuse that, well, we were just having joint maneuvers. We don't have joint maneuvers with China. I mean, that's ridiculous. And I've heard that we were fighting the mantid race during that particular time. But I think that there's no question that we are in an existential war, and we are facing adversaries which infinitely more technologically advanced than us. They know us far better than we know them. They're probably responsible for our genesis in the first place. I don't know how to win that war, but it seems that they've taken over the minds of our military and political and business leaders. I mean, if you look at someone like our current President Obama, he's a supposedly a black progressive liberal. He's not the first person that you're going to suspect of approving FEMA death camps and chemtrails. But nevertheless, here we are 8 years later, and they're still going strong. It occurs to me that it's no harder to abduct the president than it is to abduct me. You know, they've got the ability to do this without ever being suspected or caught. And who's to say, as you know, they can remove the consciousness from a person's body and store it in a vessel. They can insert any consciousness that they like back into the body. I've seen him do this. Who's to say that our president is really who we think he is? Who's to say that our generals really are under human control? We can't know. And according to their actions, they're not, because they've obviously declared war on us.
Yes, they put us in a constant state of war. They put us in a constant state of fear, trepidation, anxiety. It's the fear of want. It's the fear of scarcity. They've pushed this bogus scarcity model on us when the very energy around us is there to be tapped limitlessly. Right?
Yes. So we have that technology.
We have that technology.
They won't release it. And the amount that's spent on our black budget is tremendous. It's the projects related to alien contact or their technology is far and away the most expensive undertaking the human race has ever touched. It's estimated that they've spent over $12 trillion just on the subglobal system, the underground passage of tunnels and bases that run underneath the whole country. If that black budget money was returned to the budget, we'd be out of debt and in the black tomorrow.
And people have to understand the massive scale of this, of the tunnel systems, of the underground bases, so-called DUMs, deep underground military bases, and corporate underground bases, if truth be known, because these aerospace giants, which all started out, as you know, Derek, as small, barely able to survive aircraft companies back in the early part of the 20th century, the ones that have survived have merged into this gigantic aerospace conglomerate. After the military has the initial analysis of these recovered alien craft, and they do crash, they're imperfect vehicles, just like any other vehicle in the known universe or the known multiverse. Every once in a while, they do come to grief, or they are shot down at times, right? And so when the military initially retrieves these, and oftentimes taken to well-known places like Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, Kirtland-Sandia Complex, the Groom Lake S-4 Complex, eventually a lot of these craft, the technology, winds up in corporate, i.e. private hands. They wind up back with the aerospace corporations.
Yes.
That's run by these Babylonian banksters. And the point about warfare, Derek, is key because for those who only have a surface-level understanding of this and who believe that all alien abductions are just the military pretending to be aliens to scare people because it's a big psyop, right, and also this notion that all alien craft are just stealth craft, man-made craft, that's very much like putting the cart before the horse. When I hear that, I know these people have an a priori bias against the subject, and that's due to programming. That's due to dogmatic programming from the school systems, and quite frankly, because of fear. There's a lot of fear surrounding the subject. Cognitive dissonance. Because when you look back to the 40s and 50s, the so-called modern era, the military was deeply concerned. Some of the biggest names in military history, General Nathan Twining, who became the first Air Force general to be the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, he wrote the famous Twining Memo, basically admitting that flying saucers were real. And also you have these world-famous scientists that were known to have been involved in this. Well, we think about the UFO jet chases, which result in the crashes of jets and the plane crews. We know that there have been a number of times when alien craft have made low-level incursions to Strategic Air Command bases, deactivated the missiles, put them in no-go status. We know that there's been a number of mass abduction cases like Bentwaters, RAF Woodbridge, the Rendlesham Forest incidents. Fort Hood, Texas was another one.
China Gates.
Yes, and another one was Fort Benning, Georgia. So the military has been looking at this from at least elements of it, know that we are under predation, essentially, from
Absolutely.
One or more hostile.
They don't kill people to keep the news from being spread that there's a bunch of alien Santa Clauses that have come here to help us. They kill people to keep the news from being spread that these aliens are dangerous and the truth is so dangerous and terrifying that we can't even be allowed to know that they exist in the first place.
Now that we're on the subject of aliens, it would help the listeners to know your background because you are a Mensa member. You have a very high IQ. You're very articulate. You're very well-spoken. You play a mean keyboard from what I hear, so you're a musician too. Tell us a bit about some of your alien experiences going back to childhood, just so people know that, you know, when Derek Tyler talks about aliens, not only has he done the research, but he's lived it. He's walked the miles as an alien abductee.
Yeah, there's no shortcuts in this business, as you know very well, James. There's no substitute for putting in the time and basically taking the risks that one has to take in order to get to the good information. It doesn't come for free. It doesn't come easy. I had a sighting in, I guess, 1967 when I was just a kid. It got me curious about the subject, and it's never gone away. In 1984, just by being in the wrong place at the wrong time, I had the most spectacular sighting of my life, which was what was obviously an alien spacecraft, came up over a low hill and hovered just a couple feet off the ground beside a hospital for the developmentally disabled. Basically, it was a permanent home for those who were so severely retarded that they needed constant medical assistance. And it hovered right beside there, and I had a great view of it. It was quite large, and it was lit up like the 4th of July. You know, most of the time, sightings will only last for a couple of minutes at the most, sometimes only a few seconds. So you don't want to take your eyes off it when you have something like that in front of you. All the hair on my head, my whole body stood on end, and I knew that what I was looking at was not from this world. And instead of going away like I expected it to, it continued to just sit there silently with lights flashing all over it. It was shaped like a magnifying glass lens, convex on the top and the bottom, and had a row of lights running around the center, different colored lights that looked like they were actually spinning around the craft counterclockwise. It was just a belt around the center. It was really just the lights changing color in a synchronized fashion. But it stayed there, and after 20 minutes, a couple of F-16s came blasting in from Fairchild Air Force Base. It takes them almost exactly 20 minutes to get there on afterburners, from which is the place that I was at. And they started buzzing this craft repeatedly back and forth. It completely ignored them, like they were insignificant insects that it didn't need to bother with. And it stayed there for another 22 minutes. I couldn't see what was underneath the craft. I couldn't see if anything came out or went in. I have my suspicions. But due to a top of a tree line that was planted down further down the side of this hill, I couldn't see underneath the craft. But after 20 minutes, it silently rose back up and went over this little hilltop beside this hospital and down behind the back side of it, the jets following it the whole way. It changed my life. If it wasn't for that, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing, because you can go a whole lifetime and never answer the questions that I had answers to right there. I knew that aliens were here. I knew that the military was aware of it. I knew that they didn't consider some of them to be our friends. They obviously were giving this craft the message that you're not welcome here and we're ready to shoot at you if we need to. But they didn't fire on it, which also gave me the idea that they weren't expecting that they could bring it down if they did fire on it. There's not a lot of answers, but it gives you a good starting point. After that, nobody could ever tell me they're all just hallucinations or that they're all stealth craft. If that was a stealth aircraft, it wasn't very stealthy because it was covered with lights, you know. And if it was a Russian craft, then it penetrated 180 miles inland off of our western coast over several military installations just to hover beside a hospital for 40 minutes. So that doesn't make sense at all, you know. After that, I started studying it all that I could. And as you said, during the 90s, I ran an IRC channel, which became quite large and popular. And because of that, I was eventually contacted by some people who were either working on reverse engineering alien tech or were military officers, a couple of them from the Pentagon. And they took a liking to me for some reason, and they decided to take me into their confidence. The guy who was working on reverse engineering the tech became my best friend, and two of them worked. You're familiar with the crash down at Barguina, Brazil, in the late 90s?
The Brazilian, yeah, yes, where they were the first. There may have been two separate incidents, but the firefighters cornered one or more of these non-human entities, and then they captured it, kept it at a hospital. The Army, Brazilian Army, took over. Eventually, a team from Wright Pat flew in and recovered the aliens and brought them back to Wright Pat.
Some of them are still in the jungle. Some of them they didn't catch.
Okay.
And one of them was shot. They caught two of them in nets that they used to catch monkeys with. This was kind of a rural area around there in the jungle, you know. And one of them was shot in the chest for no apparent reason by the local militia. And the other one was eventually turned over to our forces. We paid billions of dollars in order to take possession of those bodies and that live alien, and to take possession of the crash site. And we went to the trouble of burning a big section of jungle two ridges over, scattering metal around there like it was the crash site, and then putting guards up so everybody would be diverted while the real crash site was a couple miles away. The doctors tried to, this living alien that they got was injured, and they couldn't get its spacesuit off to treat it. They were going to try to treat it. And so they decided to try to cut the suit off of its body, but they were unaware that the suit was actually grown into the body, forming one inseparable organic whole. It could never be removed again. And when they tried to cut it off, they inadvertently killed this alien. The last I heard, the body was being kept in a freezer, a secure area of the medical facility at the University of the Americas in Panama. The technology that they recovered from this crash is the basis for all nanotechnology that we see today. You didn't hear about any nanotechnology until after the Barguina incident occurred. They had machines which were the size of atoms, basically, or molecules. And they had biological machinery it was living machines, which were microscopic in size but could reproduce themselves. That's where all that technology came from. Our military's in it up to their necks. As someone from the Pentagon once told me, he said, "You're worried about the wrong thing, Derek." He said, "The biggest threat you've got right now is not from the aliens. It's from your own government who's working with the aliens."
That's the problem. And the fact that the aliens have basically, in true Nephilim-like fashion, interbred with humans and created these hybrid offshoots of theirs that they have installed in power at all strata of society,
yes,
throughout all the key institutions, and they all work through a hive consciousness fashion, these entities indwelling in these people who were genetically, indeed spiritually, predisposed to being taken up as a host by these entities.
Exactly right.
Right? And so that is the problem. And you pointed out earlier the case of the Chinese and the American navies working offshore, off California, against aliens. There were similar cases near the Arctic Circle. If memory serves, it was veteran, I think he's passed away, but veteran British UFO researcher Anthony Dodd, who himself, if memory serves, had his own UFO encounters. His sources in the MOD and elsewhere told him that the U.S. Navy was basically working with the NATO navies in the Arctic Circle in alien operations. I don't know if there were counter-alien operations. I don't know if it was a large surveillance operation to keep track of alien activity in the Arctic Circle. One of my own sources I developed many years ago, I've since lost touch with this guy, he was a radar operator in a highly secure naval intelligence facility near the Arctic Circle, and they monitored UFO activity in the Arctic Circle. In fact, he said at his facility, they had stored a recovered cigar-shaped craft and alien bodies. And he told me that they routinely tracked the alien activity in the Arctic Circle. The craft would come out of the oceans. They would just sit and park right there on ice. And veteran UFO researcher Wendell Stevens himself, a former test pilot with the Air Force way back when, he was working, if you remember, in a top-secret program out of Alaska, if memory serves, where they would outfit a number of converted B-29s with all kinds of film equipment that was state-of-the-art at the time, and they would fly around the Arctic Circle and get all this film footage and also electromagnetic signatures from UFOs and alien craft that they encountered. So, again, the lore is rich with this kind of information. What Derek is providing here is inside detailed knowledge. Now, whatever you're comfortable with sharing, Derek, what did some of your sources tell you related to the alien back engineering effort?
They said that, I'm sure you've heard of the Griotta Treaty, yes?
No, please enlighten me on that.
Well, the Griotta Treaty was a treaty which was signed by President Eisenhower in the late 50s.
Oh, yes. I didn't know that there was a name for it, but
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, it's spelled like Grenada, but without an N.
Oh, okay.
And basically, what I was told was that we had an alien race which appeared to be friendly to us, which approached us and offered to help us, to give us technology which would help us with some of our global problems, such as pollution, etc. But before they would agree to do that, the condition was that we had to eliminate all nuclear weapons from our world. The military refused to even seriously consider that because they weren't really sure if they were friendly. And they thought if they turned out to be unfriendly, that might be the only thing we could use against them that would work. So they turned them down, and what I heard was that at some point during the meeting with this ambassador, a silent alarm was accidentally triggered. Guards rushed into the room thinking the president was in trouble, and they shot the alien ambassador in the chest, killed him instantly. The source that gave me this story said they've never trusted us since that day. We hope that we can regain their trust in about 125 years or so with good behavior. What we did was we ended up signing a treaty with basically the hostile aliens. It was a consortium of them, the Greys, as you know, and all their gang. And it allowed the Greys to overfly our country at will without interference, which they could do anyway. We couldn't stop them. And to abduct our people for medical experiments and sometimes to you know, not all abductees are returned home, as you know.
Yes.
We couldn't stop them from doing that either. So we thought we would try to get some technology from them, make the best deal that we could. But basically, they sold out the people of this country for technology, mostly military technology. I'm told we got the secret of titanium refining fiber optics, the ability to miniaturize computer technology, and some other, you know, some other technologies from them which were released to the public, and many which never have been released. Most of them have never been released. Basically, the military has been working with them ever since. It's not been to our benefit because these aliens turned out to have a hostile and aggressive and intrusive agenda, which involved basically controlling this world. And it appears to me that our military is at war with itself, that there are factions within our military which absolutely have only their own and the alien interests at heart and work towards those goals all the time. And it seems that there are, of course, many parts of our military who are perfectly honorable and don't, but it seems that they're fighting against each other.
I agree. There seem to be factions at work. My intuitive feeling is that it's not one consolidated block, one monolithic block of a, quote, breakaway civilization in league with one or more certain ET races. There seems to be factions at work.
Yes.
There's a book that came out in the 90s written by a gal named Mia Adams, if memory serves, called X-Cycles, and she talks about the alien hybrid breeding program she was plugged into. And it's a long story, but basically, the person that she was set up in alien love bite with, a guy who was an FBI operative, Division 5, if memory serves, counterintelligence, she was manipulated into having an incestuous relationship with this guy. Now, she didn't know he was her son because, as you know, the genetic games the ETs and increasingly human geneticists play, they take the mitochondrial DNA from one woman and implant it into another and then hatch the baby. And then years down the track, they keep track of the offspring. In this case, it was her future lover. And then they put them together in what amounted to an incestuous relationship.
Yep.
Well, she talked about how this FBI operative, who was her lover/son, was told by his contacts in the FBI counterintelligence as well as naval intelligence that there was indeed factions at work, that there are factions of the deep black military intelligence community that are really against this alien agenda. We've seen evidence of this from other sources that have come forth, too. And it should be noted that what Derek is describing has been echoed many times over by other sources deep within the military intelligence security complex, as well as alien abductees and my labs, military abductees. You mentioned also that in the past and also in the bio that I'd read earlier that you'd had military experiences, military abduction experiences. Would you like to go over some of them?
Well, the military is responsible for many abductions. They have the technology, alien-based technology, I believe, which allows them to mimic the form of Greys so that you will think, if you have any recollection of the incident when you wake up, you'll think that you've been abducted by Greys, but you really weren't. It was the military pretending to be Greys, and the reason I'm told that they do that is to, first of all, avoid having any of their agents be caught, and second, because if you remember it, you'll start telling people about being abducted by aliens, and they will immediately stop listening to you at that point. The military abducts us for different purposes than the aliens do. None of them are to our benefit. They've performed surgery on me. They've put me through what seems to be military training exercises at some point. They use abductees for the purposes of remote viewing. When you return from an alien abduction, as you know, your psychic abilities are enhanced, greatly enhanced, for a period of at least several hours. And the military somehow knows who they take. And so what they'll often do is they will come in and they will abduct you after you've been returned by the aliens. They'll abduct you for a second time in the same night. And they will utilize your psi abilities as a remote viewer. And they use that as a form of real-time spying, which is something that nobody would expect, you know. And you don't have any control over it. I've never been in control of my own actions ever when I was abducted. It's a very insidious thing that they do. And they have the ability to, as do the aliens, this is one of the things that would have been the most difficult things for me to believe, but they do have the ability to manipulate time, to travel both forward and backward through time.
Absolutely.
And
there's no question in my mind.
Yeah. I mean, they've done it at least four different times with me. that I've been transported through time. And the first time that it happened, it appeared to be two gray aliens were doing surgery on my feet. I don't know why. There was one of them was working on each foot. And they got one of them got a result they didn't like. And all of a sudden, we were back at the beginning of the surgery, and they did the whole thing again. And they did that four or five or six times until they finally got a result they were happy with. But it was we were instantly back at the beginning, and they just did it all again. The second time that I remember was the one I think about the most because it's the only time I remember being returned home after an abduction. I was being floated above my bed, and they had brought me back in time to a time a few seconds before I'd ever been taken originally. I could see my body laying, my future body, laying asleep in the bed, and I was floating above it in the same position, and two grays were controlling my motions and stuff, and my flotation, so to speak, and they lowered me down into this my future body laying on the bed. There was no sense of contact. We seemed to occupy the same space at the same time. And a few seconds went past, and we merged together. And then I woke up like I'd been dreaming, but the room was empty, and no time had passed on the clock since I was taken. So they can bring you back in such a way that if someone's sleeping right beside you, to their point of view, it appears as if you were never taken in the first place. Of course, the Black Ops, as you know, they're not on our side. Nothing they do in these abductions is for our benefit. It's all for the benefit of the military, for the Black Ops community. They are making their own hybrids. They have their own crossbreeds. They started doing it because the aliens were doing it, and they thought it was a smart thing to do. But they are doing the same thing. They've been given did you notice how quickly the Human Genome Project was completed?
Yes.
It seemed like they started it, and then 2 months later they had the whole genome.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, I know. Because it was given to us.
Yes,
and
definitely.
It's the same thing with cloning. If you notice that Dolly the sheep was cloned, and then you never heard another word about cloning in the press since. Because the next step past that is cloning humans. And they don't want that to get in the press. They've been cloning humans for decades.
Yeah.
And they have the ability to not only to clone, but to create what are called synthetic beings, synths, they call them. Unlike a clone, which has to be grown up from a baby, it's genetically identical to a person, but it has to be grown up from a baby state. But a synthetic person begins life at the same age the person was when the cells were taken from their body. So it begins as an adult, in other words.
Yes, and they can also fast grow some of them, too, depending
yes.
On the program itself.
Yes.
There's a number of these programs that run in parallel to each other, too.
I agree with that. And these synths, I remember being on board an alien craft once, and I went past this open doorway into another room, and I saw six of these synths, apparently. I didn't realize that's what they were at the time. They were lined up head to toe, or heel to toe, and their heads were slouched forward like they were robots that had never been powered up or had been powered down, you know. And there was something about them that looked familiar to me, but I couldn't figure out what it was. They always keep us in a state of almost as if we've had a lobotomy. We're completely apathetic. We can't, you know, it doesn't even occur to you that it might be a good idea to try to get away. You can't take any actions on your own. I had a glimpse only of a few seconds of these synths, and finally, it occurred to me that I was looking at myself. They were all copies of me lined up in this, like it was a storage room. They have the ability somehow to remove the entire consciousness of a person, the soul, if you like, from your body and store it. They can put it inside what I assume is like something similar to a Dyson field. And then they can inhabit the body with any consciousness that they want. If you think about energy, everything in the universe can be described as one or another form of energy. Even our bodies are atoms in constant motion. We're made out of energy, right? Even a solid rock, it seems solid to us, but it's basically potential energy. The soul itself is nothing but energy. It is a particular, specific, complicated energy signature. And if you have the technology available to you, you can copy that signature, you can manipulate it, you can store it, you can inject it into another person if you want to. And I think that that's what they do with these synths. I think that they copy our consciousness. I've personally felt my consciousness being downloaded, like a computer being was downloading the contents of my brain several times. Right in the middle of the day, I wasn't being abducted. It was just in the middle of a normal day, and I can't describe how it feels except to say that if it happens to you, you'll know it. And I think that they copied the contents of my consciousness and injected them into those synths. And I'm told that they use those for, if it's military synths, they use them for colonizing other worlds, populating them.
That's exactly what happens. And what the military, the deep black elements of the military aerospace community have always done, which were always under control of these reptilian hybrid bloodlines anyway, the Babylonian banksters, so-called.
Yes.
They've always strived to duplicate or perhaps even exceed the known capabilities of this, that, or the other ET race. And so everything you've described, Derek, I can confirm everything you've said from the sources I've developed over the years. I would argue that there's no purely military human operation in this regard, the deep black breakaway civilization operations, because pervasive nature of this hybridization, the pervasive nature of the hosting process, makes it, in my mind, almost impossible for these deep black seemingly human operations from being infiltrated at a soul consciousness genetic level. So,
and we can tell the difference.
Yes, we can tell the difference because these people may be thinking, okay, we're doing our own thing. We're not under the control of the aliens. We're making some people think they're having abductions by aliens. Often it's not these are real abductees that they're dealing with anyway. But in actual fact, because of this pervasive hybridization project, many of the key players in those deep black operations are themselves hybrid hosts for what this, that, or the other ET race,
yes.
Mantis beings, reptilians. So, and others have likened what's going on here as an extension of what's been going on for millions of years, an extension, an outgrowth of the wars, the long wars in the Orion constellation and elsewhere in the solar system. I've spoken to a number of people, and I've had experiences myself. Okay, we know that we're legitimate alien abductees, that we've had encounters with this, that, or the other ET race, and some of us have had military experiences too. There have been times, and I've experienced this and others have experienced it, where it was clearly, blatantly an effort on the part of the military to make us think we're being abducted by aliens. I remember one experience I had. I used to live in San Diego in an apartment complex that had kind of a square-shaped, long rectangular courtyard, and there was two levels, first floor, second floor. And so what they often do is, you know, Derek, they try to simulate environments we've been in the past that are embedded in our subconscious, like schoolrooms, classrooms, auditoriums, theaters, sporting events,
yep.
So on and so forth.
Yep.
And so I found myself in what appeared to be a courtyard of a two-story apartment building that looked similar where I live, but I knew at a deep level was probably just a big soundstage or something in some facility somewhere. And I was standing next to a female MILAB who's since passed away from Houston, Texas. She was being trained in combat operations. One of her main trainers, who she called Michael, was actually not just a military guy. He was a full-on reptilian shapeshifter. And she was sharing these stories with me in the early 90s, long before this concept of shapeshifting became popular in the so-called truth movement. And anyway, she and I noticed there were several other people, presumably other abductees, could have been anyone that they dragged out of bed, but there were several other people in their nightclothes standing there, zombied out. She and I were standing side by side. We'd been in email combo and phone combo for some time by then. And then what they did was they paraded out this little, it could have been a child in what was clearly a gray costume, right? And so they paraded this thing in front of these other presumably abductees who were in a zombied out state. And I knew that if those people wake up with even a fragmented memory of seeing a gray, they're going to think, oh, I was an abduction, right? By aliens. Now, me and this gal were looking at each other and we were telepathically communicating with each other. And we were saying, this is bogus. This isn't a real alien. This is a little kid or something in a gray costume, right? And we talked about it the next day on the phone. Another friend of mine, Diane Johnston, one of the original MILABs who went forward in the late 80s, early 90s, she'd been taken variously to the now-defunct George Air Force Base. It's not defunct. It's been taken over by a private airline logistics corporation along the lines of Evergreen. There's a large underground base there where she was taken to many times by the Air Force. And at other times, she was taken by the Navy beneath China Lake, the Naval Weapons Center in the high desert of Southern California. And she recalls a time when, and she's had gray experiences, she's had reptilian experiences. She recalls a time the military presented a hologram to her of a reptilian. And she knows a reptilian from a real reptilian from a hologram. But it almost seemed to me like they were beta testing, that if we can fool these legitimate abductees into thinking they're having an alien experience, then basically we can fool anyone. And another person that comes to mind is a dear friend of mine, another MyLab. She was part of that MyLab crowd of ours in Southern California, high desert in the old days. And to echo what you said earlier, Derek, she was sexually assaulted by a reptilian. The reptilian left. She was in a heightened state of psychic ability. And no sooner had the reptilian left that she was teleported to this underground base that a number of us were investigating. A number of us were actually taken beneath. It's a joint military reptilian base, essentially. And she was taken underneath to this base, teleported there, right after she was raped by this reptilian, and she was immediately tasked with remote viewing. Places in the Persian Gulf, yep. Trying to find, I can say it now, she was tasked with finding deposed guy the CIA installed in Iraq, Hussein. Anyway, that's another example where what you're saying jibes exactly with what my sources were saying. And Dan Sherman, person whose story has really slipped under the radar, Derek, and he was a intuitive communicator, essentially a MyLab. He was part of an alien breeding program with the Zetas. His mother was an alien abductee, and the whole purpose behind his hybridization was to make him enhanced in the telepathic department so that one day he would be shunted into what he called a gray project with what was then known as the Air Force Security Service, now known as the Air Force Electronic Security Command, the NSA Air Force subsidiary. And essentially he was trained to be an intuitive communicator in the 1970s, and the telepathic messages he was getting from the Zetas, again, the Zetas come up again and again in the research, was he was given essentially the coordinates and a designated serial number identifying an alien abductee, where the Zetas had abducted somebody and returned them. So he was given a slew of number designation serial numbers identifying an abductee and also the coordinates, and he would notate all of these, all of this data and give it to his controllers. So, because, as you know, in the Granada Treaty, the deal was Eisenhower and the successive administrations would allow certain alien groups to abduct what was believed to be at the time a limited number of alien abductees, right, in return for technology. But of course, it turned out to be a far greater scale than they imagine. Yeah. And also in the aspect of two more things before we reach the end of this hour, and we'll go over this hour a little bit, and then we'll carry on, because we got so much, folks. Derek is a wealth of information, and Derek has lived this. That's the key point that people have to understand. He's not a theorist. He's gone through it. As far as the issue of time travel is concerned, I've had experiences where, and I feel these were military experiences. I don't feel this was an ET experience, where I was taken about 10 p.m. and was subjected to all kinds of training, just endless running and running through dark caverns and tunnel systems. And I was almost in a race with all these other MyLabs. And then we're just running through this. And eventually we wound up on the surface, and I was swimming, you know, underwater in this canal, and then eventually had to infiltrate into this big mansion. It was just a long, convoluted story, but I wrote it all down. Anyway, long story short, when I was returned, no, let me rephrase that. I was abducted after midnight, okay, because I distinctly remember I had the cable box on top of my telly. It was after midnight, and I was watching a telly, and I was reading at the same time, and I fell asleep, and then I was abducted, and then I was put through my paces in this experience I just described. When I was returned, it was a little after 10 p.m., and I was shaken up. I called a friend of mine, Linda, who was an abductee in North County, San Diego, and I started off apologizing profusely for waking her up in the middle of the night. And she said, no, I just got back from work. Now, I knew that she got back from work around 9:30 p.m., so I immediately glanced at the cable box on top of the TV, and it said it was a little after 10 p.m. So what I'm saying is I was returned to a point in time before I was abducted in the first place, Derek.
Yep.
During that interim, I was put through my paces and all kinds of training, and when they returned me, get this, I was levitating 3 feet above my bed in an impossible position with my head lower than my feet. I was kind of in a slanted diagonal position, and they just unceremoniously dropped me.
Wow.
Right? Yeah,
wow.
And another aspect of the time travel, the seamlessness of it, which you mentioned, Derek, is I know people that have been, including the gal that was raped by the reptilian and immediately tasked by the military with remote viewing because her psi abilities were so enhanced. Because what happens, folks, in case you don't know, is when the reptilian rapes the woman, it's a powerful kundalini rising experience that involuntarily compels the woman to have powerful full-body orgasms, which can last for hours, if you can imagine that. And at that time, in the hours and days afterwards, she can be extremely psychic. So that's why the military teleported
her. And she'll hate herself for it, but she'll secretly be wondering when they're going to come back and do it again.
Some of them will, and so it creates this guilt-shame cycle, which, listeners and ladies out there, if you've gone through that, there's no shame attached. You didn't ask for this. You're just going through, like, you know.
We're treated like livestock.
We're treated like livestock. But right before we end this first half, and I really want you to take the floor in the second, because I've talked too much in this first half, about the seamlessness of the time travel. That gal who was raped by the reptilian and then tasked with remote viewing, she and others I've spoken to would be taken variously to the underground facility or in remote areas of the surface for military training, or conversely taken to another dimension entirely. She was told that we're in another dimension at times, that they've created this niche for themselves because of their understanding of resonance and frequency and whatnot, where they've essentially carved out niches for themselves, installations, baronial mansions, estates, the lot, but it's not in our cosmos. It's in another plane entirely. And they would put her through these paces in these other dimensions, and she would be there seemingly for hours and days, and then eventually degenerated into weeks. And she was saying, I have to go back. It's like my family needs me. My children are going to be waking up soon. I have to get back and get them ready for school, right? And they would tell her over and over, don't worry, we'll send you right back, and you'll get up in time to get them ready for school, et cetera, et cetera. And she could be there, Derek, for weeks. And then seemingly what her internal biological clock is telling her, weeks in Earth linear time. And so when they finally send her back, she wakes up with a start. Sure enough, it's like, you know, she wakes up in plenty of time to get her kids going to school. It's a seamless transition.
Yep.
She has not lost a second of time.
I was put on a work crew once and starved until I was skinny as those prisoners coming out of prison camps in World War II. We were starved to death working in a mine, a copper mine. And just before we were ready to pass out and die, suddenly we were back in our own time, woke up in bed like nothing had ever happened, never been gone.
That's right. And it's a common feature for my labs, Derek, as you know, to wake up like feeling like you run a marathon or conversely been run over by a Mack truck.
Time travel is easy for the military. They do it as easily as we pop a dinner in a microwave oven, because if it wasn't, they wouldn't be using time travel on something as stupid as my feet.
Yes,
you know?
It is. That's a very good point. And there's been endless alterations of the main, what used to be the aboriginal timeline. There's endless, like, offshoots of it. Anyhow, we've reached the end of the first hour. You've been listening to the Cosmic Switchboard Show with my very special guest, Derek Tyler. If you believe in what we're doing, if you like the information we're sharing, if you like the quality of guests that we're bringing forth to you, like Derek Tyler, please go to thecosmicswitchboard.com and sign up and become a member so you can listen to the second hour of this and the other shows. So we've reached the end of the first hour. We'll see you on the flip side.